a considerable start.
But you won't have any luck in the Old Forest, objected Fredegar. No one ever has luck in there. You'll get lost. People don't go in there.
Oh, yes, they do, said Merry. The Brandybucks go in, occasionally when the fit takes them. We have a private entrance. Frodo went in once, long ago. I've been in several times, usually in daylight, of course, when the trees are sleepy and fairly quiet.
Well, do as you think best, said Fredegar. I'm more afraid of the Old Forest than of anything I know about. The stories about it are a nightmare, but my vote hardly counts, as I'm not going on the journey. Still, I am very glad someone is stopping behind who can tell Gandalf what you've done when he turns up, as I'm sure he will before long.
Fond as he was of Frodo, Fatty Bulger had no desire to leave the Shire, nor to see what lay outside it. His family came from the East Farthing, from Budgeford in Bridgefield, in fact, but had never been over the Brandywine Bridge. His task, according to the original plans of the conspirators, was to stay behind and deal with inquisitive folk, and to keep up as long as possible the pretense that Mr. Baggins was still living at Crick Hollow. He'd even brought along some old clothes of Frodo's to help him in playing the part. They little thought how dangerous that part might prove. Excellent, said Frodo when he understood the plan. We couldn't have left any message behind for Gandalf otherwise. I don't know whether these riders can read or not, of course, but I shouldn't have dared to risk a written message in case they got in and searched the house. But if Fatty's willing to hold the fort, and I can be sure of Gandalf knowing the way we've gone, that decides me. I'm going into the Old Forest first thing tomorrow. Well, that's that, said Pippin. On the whole, I'd rather have our job than Fatty's, waiting here till Black Riders come. You wait till you're well inside the forest, said Fredegar. You'll wish you were back with me before this time tomorrow. It's no good arguing about it any more, said Merry. We've still got to tidy up and put the finishing touches to the packing before we get to bed. I shall call you all before the break of day. When at last he'd got to bed, Frodo couldn't sleep for some time. His legs ached. He was glad that he was riding in the morning. Eventually he fell into a vague dream in which he seemed to be looking out of a high window over a dark sea of tangled trees. Down below, among the roots, there was the sound of creatures crawling and snuffling. He felt they would smell him out sooner or later. Then he heard a noise in the distance. At first he thought it was a great wind coming over the leaves of the forest. Then he knew that it was not leaves, but the sound of the sea far off, a sound he had never heard in waking life, though it had often troubled his dreams. Suddenly he found he was out in the open. There were no trees after all. He was on a dark heath, and there was a strange salt smell in the air. Looking up, he saw before him a tall white tower, standing alone on a high ridge. A great desire came over him to climb the tower and see the sea. He started to struggle up the ridge toward the tower, but suddenly a light came in the sky, and there was a noise of thunder. Chapter 6 The Old Forest. Frodo woke suddenly. It was still dark in the room. Merry was standing there with a candle in one hand and banging on the door with the other. All right, what is it? Said Frodo, still shaken and bewildered. What is it? Cried Merry. It's time to get up. It's 4:30 and very foggy. Come on. Sam's already getting breakfast ready. Even Pippin is up. I'm just going to saddle the ponies and fetch the one that's to be the baggage carrier. Wake that sluggard Fatty. At least he must get up and see us off. Soon after 6 o'clock, the 5 hobbits were ready to start. Fatty Bulger was still yawning. They stole quietly out of the house. Merry went in front, leading a laden pony, and took his way along a path that went through a spinney behind the house and then cut across several fields. The leaves of trees were glistening and every twig was dripping. The grass was grey with cold dew. Everything was still, and far away noises seemed near and clear. Fowls chattering in a yard, someone closing a door of a distant house. In their shed they found the ponies, sturdy little beasts of the kind loved by hobbits, not speedy, but good for a long day's work. They mounted, and soon they were riding off into the mist, which seemed to open reluctantly before them and close forbiddingly behind them. After riding for about an hour, slowly and without talking, they saw the hedge looming suddenly ahead. It was tall and netted over with silver cobwebs.
"How are you going to get through this?" asked Fredegar. "Follow me," said Merry, "and you'll see."
He turned to the left along the hedge, and soon they came to a point where it bent inwards, running along the lip of a hollow. A cutting had been made at some distance from the hedge, and went sloping gently down into the ground. It had walls of brick at the sides, which rose steadily, until suddenly they arched over and formed a tunnel that dived deep under the hedge and came out in the hollow on the other side. Here Fatty Bulger halted.
"Goodbye, Frodo," he said. "I wish you weren't going into the forest. I only hope you'll not need rescuing before the day's out. But good luck to you, today and every day."
"If there are no worse things ahead than the old forest, I shall be lucky," said Frodo. "Tell Gandalf to hurry along the east road. We shall soon be back on it and going as fast as we can." "Goodbye," they cried, and rode down the slope and disappeared from Fredegar's sight into the tunnel. It was dark and damp. At the far end, it was closed by a gate of thick-set iron bars. Merry got down and unlocked the gate, and when they'd all passed through, he pushed it to again. It shut with a clang, and the lock clicked. The sound was ominous. "There," said Merry, "you've left the Shire, and are now outside and on the edge of the old forest."
"Are the stories about it true?" asked Pippin.
"I don't know what stories you mean," Merry answered. "If you mean the old bogey stories Fatty's nurses used to tell him about goblins and wolves and things of that sort, I should say no. At any rate, I don't believe them. But the forest is queer. Everything in it very much more alive, more aware of what's going on, so to speak, than things are in the Shire. And the trees don't like strangers. They watch you. They're usually content merely to watch you, as long as daylight lasts, and don't do much. Occasionally the most unfriendly ones may drop a branch, or stick a root out, or grasp at you with a long trailer. But at night things can be most alarming, or so I'm told. I've only once or twice been in here after dark, and then only near the hedge. I thought all the trees were whispering to each other, passing news and plots along in an unintelligible language, and the branches swayed and groped without any wind. They do say the trees do actually move and can surround strangers and hem them in. In fact, long ago they attacked the hedge. They came and planted themselves right by it and leaned over it. But the hobbits came and cut down hundreds of trees and made a great bonfire in the forest and burned all the ground in a long strip east of the hedge. After that, the trees gave up the attack, but they became very unfriendly. There's still a wide, bare space not far inside where the bonfire was made."
"Is it only the trees that are dangerous?" asked Pippin.
"There are various queer things living deep in the forest and on the far side," said Merry. "Or at least I've heard so, but I haven't seen any of them. But some things make paths. Whenever one comes inside, one finds open tracks, but they seem to shift and change from time to time in a queer fashion. Not far from this tunnel there is, or was for a long time, the beginning of quite a broad path leading to the bonfire glade, and then on more or less in our direction, east and a little north. That is the path I'm going to try and find." The hobbits now left the tunnel gate and rode across the wide hollow. On the far side was a faint path leading up onto the floor of the forest, 100 yards and more beyond the hedge. but it vanished as soon as it brought them under the trees. Looking back, they could see the dark line of the hedge through the stems of trees that were already thick about them. Looking ahead, they could see only tree trunks of innumerable sizes and shapes, straight or bent, twisted, leaning, squat or slender, smooth or gnarled and branched, and all the stems were green or grey with moss and slimy, shaggy growths. Merry alone seemed fairly cheerful. "You'd better lead on and find that path," Frodo said to him. "Don't let's lose one another, or forget which way the hedge lies." They picked away among the trees, and their ponies plodded along, carefully avoiding the many writhing and interlacing roots. There was no undergrowth. The ground was rising steadily, and as they went forward, it seemed that the trees became taller, darker, and thicker. There was no sound except an occasional drip of moisture falling through the still leaves. For the moment, there was no whispering or movement among the branches, but they all got an uncomfortable feeling that they were being watched with disapproval, deepening to dislike and even enmity. The feeling steadily grew until they found themselves looking up quickly or glancing back over their shoulders as if they expected a sudden blow. There was not as yet any sign of a path, and the trees seemed constantly to bar their way. Pippin suddenly felt that he could not bear it any longer, and without warning let out a shout.
"Oi! Oi!" he cried. "I'm not going to do anything. Just let me pass through, will you?"
The others halted, startled, but the cry fell as if muffled by a heavy curtain. There was no echo or answer, though the wood seemed to become more crowded and more watchful than before.
"I shouldn't shout if I were you," said Merry. "It does more harm than good."
Frodo began to wonder if it were possible to find a way through, and if he'd been right to make the others come into this abominable wood. Merry was looking from side to side, and seemed already uncertain which way to go. Pippin noticed it.
"It hasn't taken you long to lose us," he said.
But at that moment Merry gave a whistle of relief and pointed ahead.
"Well, well," he said. "These trees do shift. There's the bonfire glade in front of us, or I hope so. But the path to it seems to have moved away."
The light grew clearer as they went forward. Suddenly they came out of the trees and found themselves in a wide circular space. There was sky above them, blue and clear to their surprise, for down under the forest roof they'd not been able to see the rising morning and the lifting of the mist. The sun was not, however, high enough yet to shine down into the clearing, though its light was on the treetops. The leaves were all thicker and greener about the edges of the glade, enclosing it with an almost solid wall. No tree grew there, only rough grass and many tall plants. Stalky and faded hemlocks, and wood parsley, fireweed seeding into fluffy ashes, and rampant nettles and thistles. A dreary place, but it seemed a charming and cheerful garden after the close forest. The hobbits felt encouraged, and looked up hopefully at the broadening daylight in the sky. At the far side of the glade, there was a break in the wall of trees and a clear path beyond it. They could see it running on into the wood, wide in places and open above, though every now and again the trees drew in and overshadowed it with their dark boughs. Up this path they rode. They were still climbing gently, but they now went much quicker and with better heart, for it seemed to them that the forest had relented and was going to let them pass unhindered after all. But after a while the air began to get hot and stuffy. The trees drew close again on either side, and they could no longer see far ahead. Now stronger than ever, they felt again the ill will of the wood pressing on them. So silent was it that the fall of their ponies' hooves, rustling on dead leaves and occasionally stumbling on hidden roots, seemed to thud in their ears. Frodo tried to sing a song to encourage them, but his voice sank to a murmur.
"O wanderers in the shadowed land, despair not, for though dark they stand, All woods there be must end at last, and see the open sun go past, the setting sun, the rising sun, for days end or the day begun. For east or west all woods must fail.
Fail. Even as he said the word, his voice faded into silence. The air seemed heavy, and the making of words wearisome. Just behind them, a long branch fell from an old overhanging tree with a crash into the path. The trees seemed to close in before them. "They don't like all that about ending and failing," said Mary. "I shouldn't sing any more at present. Wait till we do get to the edge, and then we'll turn and give them a rousing chorus." If he felt any great anxiety, he didn't show it. The others didn't answer. They were depressed. A heavy weight was settling steadily on Frodo's heart, and he regretted now, with every step forward, that he'd ever thought of challenging the menace of the trees. He was, indeed, just about to stop and propose going back, if that was still possible, when things took a new turn. The path stopped climbing and became for a while nearly level. The dark trees drew aside, and ahead they could see the path going almost straight forward. Before them, but some distance off, there stood a green hilltop, treeless, rising like a bald head out of the encircling wood. The path seemed to be making directly for it. They now hurried forward again, delighted with the thought of climbing out for a while above the roof of the forest. The path dipped, and then again began to climb upwards, leading them at last to the foot of the steep hillside. There it left the trees and faded into the turf. The wood stood all round the hill like thick hair that ended sharply in a circle round a shaven crown. The hobbits led their ponies up, winding round and round until they reached the top. There they stood and gazed about them. The air was gleaming and sunlit, but hazy, and they couldn't see to any great distance. Near at hand, the mist was now almost gone, though here and there it lay in hollows of the wood, and to the south of them, out of a deep fold cutting right across the forest, the fog still rose like steam or wisps of white smoke. "That," said Merry, pointing with his hand, "that's the line of the Withywindle. It comes down out of the downs and flows southwest through the midst of the forest to join the Brandywine below Haysend. We don't want to go that way. The Withywindle Valley is said to be the queerest part of the whole wood, the centre from which all the queerness comes, as it were." The others looked in the direction that Merry pointed out, but they could see little but mists over the damp and deep-cut valley, and beyond it the southern half of the forest faded from view. The sun on the hilltop was now getting hot. It must have been about 11 o'clock, but the autumn haze still prevented them from seeing much in other directions. In the west they couldn't make out either the line of the hedge or the valley of the Brandywine beyond it. Northward, where they looked most hopefully, they could see nothing that might be the line of the Great East Road, for which they were making. They were on an island in a sea of trees, and the horizon was veiled. On the southeastern side the ground fell very steeply, as if the slopes of the hill were continued far down under the trees, like island shores that really are the sides of a mountain rising out of deep waters. They sat on the green edge and looked out over the woods below them while they ate their midday meal. As the sun rose and passed noon, they glimpsed far off in the east the grey-green lines of the downs that lay beyond the old forest on that side. That cheered them greatly, for it was good to see a sight of anything beyond the wood's borders, though they didn't mean to go that way if they could help it. The Barrow Downs had as sinister a reputation in hobbit legend as the forest itself. At length they made up their minds to go on again. The path that had brought them to the hill reappeared on the northward side, but they hadn't followed it far before they became aware that it was bending steadily to the right. Soon it began